Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch in the drivels of, is that a word, of December? We're in the middle of winter. It's cold here in Kansas City.
It's a word now.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hello. You are, that was the most chipper intro ever. And
it feels good. We're away from the misery that is baseball playoffs.
Yeah. We had one full calendar month in between and baseball ending, and now we are in December. It's a new time. It's officially off season. 2019 season is like basically ancient history at this point.
I would love for you to look up the last time the Dodger season ended on a win. So it had to be, they had to not make the playoffs, and they had to win the last game.
Off the top of my head, it's 2011.
Okay, we'll go with that. That was the last time I was happy, this happy, but today's going to be happy. I sound happy. Not only are we that far removed from losing baseball, we also, you and I are drafting the team of the decade, the team of the tens,
We're drafting players that may or may not have played on the 2011 team. Spoiler alert, it was actually 2012.
Okay.
They ended that year with a win and did not make the playoffs. They missed by two games.
Hooray. It's probably some players that played on that team.
Yeah, yes, for sure. They beat the Giants that day, so they ended their season by beating the Giants. That's like the most Dodger way possible. Yeah, yeah, I'm in. So yeah.
So we're going to be doing that. Going to talk just a little bit about decade stats in general, the highs and the lows. We've got some questions from Craig. I think you have a Dodger Rewind from us, don't you?
I do.
That's exciting. We're going to have all that after this. So before we get into a draft mode, get in on our war room, figure out what players we should be taking. Oh, get a little bit of news that we should probably cover, including late breaking news as of like a few hours ago, late last night, I think.
Yeah, but actually, before the breaking news, do you have Disney Plus? Have you seen Baby Yoda yet?
I do, yeah.
Okay, I don't have it, but I'm enjoying all the GIFs and the memes. Baby Yoda, for something I have not watched, is one of the most adorable things I've ever seen. So, yeah, and it's like dominating my headspace right now. So that's kind of where I'm at as we're recording this. Okay, so speaking of sage ancient warrior, Baby Yoda, like this, I don't know, whatever.
As adorable as Rich Hill.
Yeah, Rich Hill. So currently a free agent. Dodgers are among the many teams interested. The issue is he probably won't be available till like June or July. He actually had a surgery in October. It's called primary revision surgery. It's not like a full Tommy John, but I was looking this up and it's basically like for people who have already had Tommy John surgery, like they go in and like clean up the UCL and the repair they already made and like that sort of thing. He had Tommy John surgery in 2011, so this is way back. Rich Hill, this is from JP Hornstra in the Orange County Register. He talked to Rich Hill, said this wasn't an option 6 years ago. This guarantees I'll be back. Given where I'm at in my career, how much longer I'd like to play, the percentage of success is upward of 95%. So this was sort of like towards the end of the season, he was like pretty adamant that he wanted to still pitch. So I think like we talked about, like a return to the Dodgers makes sense, especially because even if like, let's say he didn't have this surgery, I think the plan would have been probably for him to like get around 20 starts and you just take what you can get, you know? And maybe he's healthy later in the year. And I think that's the same case now. So maybe it's going to be some sort of a, if they do sign him, sort of a, you know, a 1 year deal with incentives or something like that. I guess the report is, I think his agent said, told one of the, maybe one of the reporters from Boston that I think like 10 teams have called in. So it makes sense. Like, you know, someone you could stash probably signs for a couple million plus incentives. That makes sense. But yeah, so that's sort of where we're at with Rich Hill at this point.
Other news came, like I mentioned, late last night, early this morning, involves Scott Alexander.
This would have been a much better Baby Yoda transition for me because
I was going to help you out, but I didn't know which you were going So
You're right. It's my fault. I messed that up. So it's the today's the tender deadline, and there's nothing more tender than Baby Yoda. So there we are. Yeah. So it's mostly for like arbitration eligible folks, like for instance, like Justin Turner was in 2013, after 2013, when the Mets said, you know what, we don't like this guy, we're going to non-tender him and make him a free agent. And then he ended up somewhere else. I forgot where. Mm-hmm. I stopped following. You know, the Dodgers have 12 arbitration eligible folks. And you know, these things sort of work, the whole system is sort of designed to where the two sides sort of have their own ideas of what they're worth, and then they sort of meet in the middle. And it usually doesn't really work until like deadlines are in play. And usually the deadline is like in January, which is the actual date to exchange figures. And that's more of a hard deadline. The Dodgers have a rule of, trial and go or trial and file. So if a player files for arbitration, they cease negotiations and then they will go to a hearing. The Dodgers haven't gone to a hearing since like, man, I actually forgot this was one of those things that was like an easy fact every year. I think it's 2007. It was Joe Beimel. And like Friedman was like 5-0 in arbitration cases in Tampa, but he hasn't gone in a long time either. So generally, these get deals done. This is much of more of a softer deadline, sort of more toward the fringe players in arbitration, I will say. So like Scott Alexander had surgery himself last year. The MLB trade rumors projection had him making $1 million in arbitration. So he signed a one-year deal for $875,000. And so he'll be back. You know, he has options, so he's much more of a, you know, someone the Dodgers can have in the minors if they don't use him. He's, you know, obviously big sinker guy, had some control issues, maybe not as subject to the proposed three-batter minimum that may or may not be in play this in 2020. That'll be interesting to see. But someone who this will happen after we record, but before we post this, like today's the tender deadline at 5 p.m. Pacific, like Yimi Garcia out of options in that same sort of boat. Like he's someone they could non-tender just because like probably he has a long shot of making the team. He's also the same kind of guy they can come to a deal with, and it could be a non-guaranteed deal, which is like most of these deals are. Alexander's deal per Hornster was guaranteed. And he could, Yimi Garcia, if he does agree to such a deal, maybe he could be what's sort of, effectively a roster invitee where he's on the 40-man roster, but like still sort of a long shot to make the team. And like, he's sort of using spring training as a audition for not only for the Dodgers, but like the other 29 teams. So we'll see how that sort of goes, but, yeah, so we'll find out more on that, between now and then.
Before we get right into the decade stuff, I think there's one bit of news that it involves numbers and money numbers, which I always associate with you, Eric. I don't know if you are trying to distance yourself away from that, but I know you love getting nitty gritty in your spreadsheets, so I'll let you share this news.
I do not mind having that sort of rep. So, yeah, so the annual sort of accounting of the, I guess you could call it the postseason bonus or whatever, however you would term it. It's the postseason shares. This has been around for a long time, like a century or possibly even more. The players pool is made up of essentially a split of the gate receipts from every round of the playoffs, and it's set up to where, you know, this sort of rule was like born in like times when gambling was prevalent and like a real threat to the sport. It's only for like the guaranteed games of the series. Like in the first round in the division series, it's the first three games. In the league championship and World Series, it's the first four games. So it's not one of those things where the players could like throw games to make sure the series goes longer so they make more money. It's actually the team's benefit. Like if a series goes longer, they actually keep more they keep the gate receipts for the final few games. So there's no like sort of foul play or whatever. But so the total players pool this year it's the third highest ever, but down 9% from last year. This sort of goes hand in hand. That's more of a baseball interest thing. Like I do wonder. I obviously this is like very small potatoes, but like having the Dodgers in the World Series. To have half the games in the last two World Series in a 55,000 seat stadium as opposed to like in the 40s, that probably plays a small role in it because the World Series is the highest valued ticket. So that probably played a little bit into it. But anyway, the further you go, the more you get. And then the teams usually split it up. They generally vote. Like who gets a full share? Some people get a partial share. It's not just players. It's like clubhouse attendance, some I don't know. I think team PR people even get in there, or just generally like people who help out the players a lot. And that's the players vote on it, so it's up to them. But the Dodgers share this year, a full share was $32,427. So in a sport where like the minimum salary. It was $555,000. It's one thing to like, okay, on its surface, like that's like to me, that's an amazing amount of money, right? right? To you and I, that's a significant amount of money. To like a major leaguer, maybe not. But I think some of the like the younger players, like look, Max Muncy hasn't really made anything in the majors. Like he's played two full seasons now as a major leaguer, so like that's good. But like. That's like a pretty good bonus, right? For like someone like that. But it was even better the previous 2 years because in 2018, the Dodgers player share was $262,000. The year before it was $259,000, just shy of $260,000. So you look at it this year, like the World Series loser this year was the Astros and they got $256,000. So it's just slightly down. The Nationals for winning it got $382,000 per player or per full share. I was looking at this. So the Dodgers from 2016 to 19 under Roberts, one LCS trip or one LCS loss, two World Series losses, and then this year the first round loss. But that's, three deep runs in the playoffs in 4 years. And the total, like, full share for players who were on, like, all four teams who got full shares, $677,918. Not a bad sort of extra bonus, as it were, to play in October. So, like, if you're, like, someone who's making, like, near the minimum in those 4 years or maybe three of the 4 years, you're basically making – like a whole another year's salary by making the playoffs in all those years. So good for them.
All right. Ready to talk about the last 10 years?
Yes.
You know, what's remarkable. You and I have recorded podcasts for most of these years.
Yeah. I always forget how early we started this. Like, I think we talked about this before. It's like, it's still shocking. I vaguely remember like literally recording with you in 2013. And I know it probably started even before then. But like, man, that's a long time ago. Like, it's so long ago.
Dr. Pepperburger, forever ago.
Oh my god!
Earlier episodes.
Was that Sports Bar?
It was the Sports Bar in Phoenix. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yep.
Well, we're gonna have to go back on this knowledge because you sent me the top 100 player position players and top 100 pitching players. For the decade, sorted by WAR, just to kind of refresh our memory. And man, once you get past like even 15 names, you're getting into some really like, ooh, man, remember that? I don't remember that name, or like I remember that, but I can't believe they're that high up on this list. So,
and we kind of talked about this. I don't remember how much of this was on the air last podcast, but when we sort of talked about Bellinger and how he ranked in the decade, like the decade for the Dodgers is basically, for the most part, split in half. You basically have a group that was there for the first half, and then a group that was there for the second half, and then like Kershaw and Kenley were there for the whole time.
Yeah, it's sort of the Mattingly years and the Roberts years with intermingling. Yeah.
And like even like Andre Ethier was technically active for 8 years of the 10, but like his last two were like not, he was injured till September. So, but he was, that's basically like, he's like a 6 year guy. And then like Matt Kemp was obviously, he was first 5 years of the decade, then traded and back for one. So like there's all the, and then like the new group with like Seager and Bellinger and now Jock Peterson and like all the, it's just funny like to see sort of the split, like just when you're looking at these and you're like, man, it's pretty crazy.
So we're going to draft the team and we're going to kind of go over how we're going to do that first. But I think you wanted to sum up the decade in general, just how the team ranked amongst the other teams of the decade, but also the Dodgers sort of and their franchise history.
Yeah. So So just looking at it, like this decade, I mean, look, first we got to get the important thing out of the way.
It's obviously missing something. It's a really,
right. The Dodgers like did not like win a championship. So what? Like that said, like, so that's obviously the huge caveat with all this, but then as we know, we've talked about this before, like the decade is much more than like there's obviously a regular season. That's a huge sort of barometer of success too. So the Dodgers during the decade of the 2010s, they won 919 games. So 92 wins a year. That's like very good for any extended period of time, especially for a decade. That's second in MLB during the decade. I believe the Yankees were first. They had 7 playoff appearances. It was the last 7 years they won the division. That was tied with the Yankees. The Yankees won 4 divisions, 3 wild cards. The Dodgers are the only team with 7 division championships during the decade. They were third in playoff wins. They were 33, and they were a nice break even 33-33 in the postseason.
That sounds on the nose and perfect.
Right. So, but like that said, over a good period of time, that's a pretty good mark. So they were third in the majors in playoff wins in the 2010s. The Giants, who only made the playoffs 3 years or no 4 years because they won a wild card too, but had the 3 championships. They won 36 games in the postseason, and the Cardinals won 35. So those were the two. And it's funny, like no American League team was up there. So in Dodgers history, the only two decades, the Dodgers had a 567 win percentage this decade. And look, I understand. We're talking like baseball decades here, and the actual decades is actually year 1 to 10. We get it. We know. Shut up. This is easy because it's the tens, the 20s, that kind of stuff. So that's what we're dealing with. In the 1950s, the Dodgers had a 592 winning percentage. In the 1940s, they were 581. Those were the only two better decades. They did not win a championship in the 1940s either. They won 2 in the 1950s. So
this does every time we've mentioned this before, but it's the Venn quote in the life of the Dodgers. Nothing has ever come easy. It really, this team really feels sort of like that Dim Bums team, you know?
Yeah.
Harold loved lots of great memories, but frustrating at the end.
Like, so when the Dodgers won their first championship in 1955, they had gotten so close. Like, you know, they lost to the Yankees in the World Series in 1947, 1949, 1952, 1953, and they lost the heartbreaking playoff in 51. So that was like in that's an 8 year period where they have like 5 heartbreaks, and then they hadn't won in 65 years as a franchise. The Dodgers are now at 31 years since their last season. So it's like, it really is like kind of close to that. But in my opinion, like, I think this decade is closer to a different decade. And I think we have a question about that.
Oh, you want me to move on right into that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Hamakavula Todd, I don't know what you want me calling you, but I'm going to call you Hama. From the baseball toaster Dodger Thoughts Day, when you and I, when we were all just commentators.
Yeah.
His question is, many Dodgers fans seem to be frustrated with the team right now. And why not? After underperforming in the playoffs, including back-to-back World Series losses, the fan base is starved. On the other hand, it might be instructive to look at the Dodgers of the 70s, who had similar postseason results. Now, 40 years later, how do you think about the 1970s teams? As great, memorable teams that never quite got there, or underperformers who didn't step up in the biggest moments? And then follow-up question is, what do you think the legacy of the 10 Dodgers will be in 2059?
Yeah, so this was a really good question, and I guess I never thought about this. So in hindsight, we look now at like the 70s Dodgers as like a very good team. They had like, you know, some great players. They had the infield, and then it was all like culminated because they ended up winning the championship in 1981. So like I think like that's gonna determine
Yep, I agree.
after the fact. So like, but if you look at it like the 70s, it's like a really good comp. Like the 70s Dodgers win percentage was 565, and you know, obviously different time. They won 910 games, so they averaged nine or 91 wins a year as opposed to 92. And it was a different playoff format. Only the divisions got in, no wild cards. So a little bit different. They did only make the playoffs three times. They also were up against the Big Red Machine that decade, but held their own. But they got to the World Series in all three of those years. So like, it's a pretty like good comp. Also, like they Tommy Lasorda took over as manager from like Walter Alston. First 2 years gets to the World Series, they lose both. Just Dave Robertson, his second and third year, got to the World Series, lost both. And like they didn't, and they lost to the same team, and they beat the same team in 81. So that added a little bit to it. So like the Dodgers don't necessarily have that, but like if they could just break through and win a championship in one of the next 2 years, that's how you sort of validate what they've done. Not that it necessarily needs that, but it kind of does. It's funny because, like, you know, I don't know. Like, the current CBA expires at the end of the 2021 season. And, like, the owners and the players seem to be at odds more so than any time, like, since the wiping out the World Series baseball strike of 94. So, like, if you look at this, like, if there is, like, a baseball strike, like, to start the, like, 2022 season, and maybe that's, like, an abbreviated season or something. What if the Dodgers won the championship that year to just complete the full comp, and like they're basically like following the 70s rubric to a T. So maybe that's what they do. So maybe next 2 years just lay low, compete, but maybe don't win. But then 2022, we have a strike. Say it wipes out a third of the season or a fourth of the season. The Dodgers win their 120 game schedule. They win the West. And then they actually break through and get to the World Series and win it. And then we'll look back and go, oh yeah, they made like three World Series in 6 years or whatever it
It
is.
is
But
funny how
they
just
were really good.
one flips the script. It's just how complete all it takes is one. You can be a
Yeah.
loser all the rest of the time, and that's what you'll be remembered as.
Right. Well then, but also it brings up the point too of like if people like no one like goes back and looks at like the well, let's say like the 2018 Brewers, right? Like they got to game seven in the NLCS. People think of the Dodgers more as losers in 2018 than the Brewers, and they beat the Brewers. So like, you know, like if you get to the World Series and lose, that's like the worst thing you could do from a perception standpoint. And like, whereas it's actually like a great accomplishment. And then like just compared to this year, right? Like they lost in the first round, completely different offseason, or postseason too, but like it really colors how the season when they won 106 games. But then if you look at it like so you just tack on that one championship, then you're like, wow. So this team, this is like their third World Series in X amount of years. They won 100 games at least twice, including 106 one year. This was a really good team for a good period of time. And then, but yeah, like I said, need that, you need that at least like one championship to like sort of justify.
Yeah, and maybe it's something like one every 6 or 7 years is what you need. Thinking about the Braves team, I think that the Braves team in the 90s is sort of still kind of thought of as a, man, they should have won more. But yeah, still not like not to the level. They're not the Buffalo Bills, right? Which is the consummate, like, is this where the Dodgers are headed comparison if we kind of go to all sports? And hopefully not.
Right. And then if you look to, like, they won, they had their championship. They were, man, they were up 2-0 on the Yankees in 96. They almost won 2 in a row. And then, but like, look at the team they beat in 95 to win the championship, the Indians. Like, the Indians won like 5 straight divisions. They were excellent. They won 100 games in the shortened strike season. They were so good. And, like, they didn't win a championship. The Mariners were so good. They didn't win a championship. They're not thought of – they're you know, much more of like a
what,
like,
went
the Mariners
wrong?
Didn't even get to the World
the
Series.
The Mariners, especially, yeah, what went wrong in that season? Like, yeah, how did you not win? You were so good.
So, like, that's where you're sort of headed if you don't, like, complete the mission, I guess, as it were.
All right, we're going to do this draft. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to explain how it goes. And I think you have a long list of stats for us after the first pick. And we'll be back after this. Okay, here we are. You and I each get a decade team. We can't pick the same player. We're going to fill... It's not going to be a full 25-man roster. Well, some of these players, it really feels like we should get to split them up, like pitcher and catcher superstar Russell Martin. But how it works is we're going to draft, I think, 4 starters, 2 relievers, 1 bench player, and then a starter at every offensive position. And then we're going to kind of compare notes. Some of these are really – we were looking at this ahead of time. Some of these, it's really easy who 1 and 2 are. Some of them, I have no idea who you're going to pick whatsoever. And others, you really want to get that first guy because it gets a little shallow after that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anything you wanted to add to that?
No.
All right. We're going to figure out who goes first. So I've got a pack. This is the 1992 Heritage Series. And I just want you to tell me if the player I pick is a pitcher or a catcher.
Okay.
Got it.
Catcher.
No, a pitcher or a position player. Sorry.
I
said catcher, so this is my bad.
All right, so I'll go position player.
That's how I get you. Sorry, yeah. it's a left fielder. You said catcher.
Idiot. Yeah.
Bip Roberts.
All right.
So you get to go first. I think I know who you're gonna take.
Do I get to go now?
Oh, you get a pick. You get a pick. I guess you get the option.
I will go first. And I will take Sean Figgins. No, I will take Mr. Clayton Kershaw.
What? Yeah, not close. How much he leads the Dodgers in decade war?
So yeah, I was looking at this because not only is like Kershaw, you know, clearly the number one. Like, and look, this isn't just like the WAR leaderboard. We did like make a list of players by WAR just as a sort of a reference or whatever. But it's like laughable. So it like just from pitching war. Okay. Well, yeah. From pitching war, I won't even say who the next players are, but like he has more than triple the second place guy. The Dodgers only had 4 players, 3 other players in double digits war for the decade. This is Baseball Reference version. The Dodgers had 10 players in double digits position player war. Kershaw was double the number one. Over triple the number 2 of position players. So like he is head and shoulders ahead. Like we were like sort of had a dilemma about this, but we figured the way to go is to give the next person the next 2 picks to sort of make it more fair, more balanced.
Yeah. Let's see. You're gonna go through. I think.
I stopped myself.
Keep telling me more about Clayton Kershaw.
Not only did he do, but yeah. So there's like. So I just went through. Like he actually. The 2010s, Kershaw was first in the majors in pitching WAR from both Baseball Reference 59.3 and Fangraphs 59.1. If you look back at the in every decade for the Dodgers, and this is not like any 10-year period, it's like just the each specific decade, so like the 1900s, the 1910s, the 20s, etc. The only other Dodgers pitcher to have a 50 WAR decade was Dazzy Betts in the 20s. He was 50.1, and he only pitched 8 years. And so if you look at that, like if you want to sort of balance that to Kershaw, Kershaw's first 8 years of the 2010s, he was 52.5 WAR, so slightly ahead of Vance. Surprisingly, Koufax didn't have 50 WAR, but that's also because he retired in 1966, leaving 3 years on the table in the 60s. So he had 47.9 WAR. So in his 7 years in the 60s, Kershaw in his first 7 years of the 2010s had 47.7. So like we've grown up the last decade hearing all the comparisons between Koufax and Kershaw. They're left-handed, they're legendary, they've each won three Cy Youngs. Koufax has won some championships, Kershaw has not. But like that's just another way they're sort of linked. Their performance is really great. There's other pitchers. It's happened eight times. So five other pitchers have had a 30 WAR decade with the Dodgers, and we'll talk about one of them a little bit later. But just in terms of in the majors in the 2010s, Kershaw was first in ERA, 231, first in ERA plus, 164, first in Cy Youngs, tied with Scherzer with three, first in complete games, 25, first in shutouts, 15. He was second in FIP, 264. I don't know if you're staring at the show notes right now, but okay, I was going to ask you.
I would not have guessed.
Okay, easiest trivia question ever. So it's Jose Fernandez, who sadly passed away, obviously, but he had 76 starts, and he was 244. So FIP. Kershaw was actually third in strikeouts, 2179, behind Scherzer and Verlander. He was third in innings. He was 1996, so just four innings shy of a 2,000 inning decade. Also behind Verlander and Scherzer, third in wins, 156. Behind, you guessed it, Scherzer and Verlander. They were really close, 161, 160, 156. So, that's a awesome decade. Like that's about as good as you can get in terms of just overall performance. So, so I think we knew he was going to be the first pick. That's why we had to sort of figure out a way to balance out the teams otherwise.
Speaking of which, so I get two picks, right? That's what you're telling me?
Yeah, you get the next two, and then we'll just draft two at a time after that.
So I'm going to go on two positions of scarcity, I think, where it gets a little dry after the top picks, and I'm going to take Justin Turner as my third baseman, 27 position WAR, and then I'm going to take Kenley Jansen as my closer, 15.8 WAR.
So full disclosure, those would have also been my two, three had you pick Kershaw. You could, like, making a WAR argument is fine if you want to pick someone over
Jansen. It's less
but
WAR.
Like,
I mean, WAR matters, right, but just in terms of who else? Who else?
Right. He's the closer of the decade, right? Like, and so, like, he was so good. So I completely get it. Turner has, like, a pretty huge lead in WAR. Like, only one in the 20s. Among position players, the only one in the 20s, even counting pitchers other than Kershaw. So like I think we talk about this a lot. We underestimate just how good Justin Turner has been. He's been excellent. So yeah. Okay. So I have a couple picks here. This is a tough one. I mean, it's funny because you're just really getting the picks down. Okay. I have to. I'm going to go. Man, this is tough. I'm thinking. I'm stalling.
I noticed.
You know what? I'm going to go Seager Bellinger.
Okay. I don't blame you. I need to ask, what position are you taking Cody Bellinger at?
Oh, good question. Well, actually, let's just to give ourselves the flexibility.
You going to slot them later? That's not fair.
it just depends who. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I'm entering him in our table as first base for now.
Sure.
But like, it's, I mean, look, I should have just put him in the outfield, but like, just because he played there more, but.
It is interesting that he's played there more. He's shown how much value he can get as an outfielder. He's arguably more valuable there, but I still think of him as a first baseman just because that's how he came up. Not only it's how he came up, I think the thing that was said most about him is like, hey, this kid can hit and he's going to be a gold glove at first base. That was the pitch about him when he was a prospect.
He won a gold. His gold glove is in the outfield. His silver slugger is in the outfield. His MVP was a season where he played more in the outfield. You're right. It's the same thing. Like in his career, but he has actually played slightly more in the outfield, but it's only like 200 inning difference. So, for now, I'm listing him as a first baseman, but we'll see how the draft goes.
All right, it's back to me. I am going to take someone I would not confuse with an outfielder and take Adrian Gonzalez, who we just lost about 2 minutes of recording to because I butchered typing Gonzalez. Because I'm trying to record here, Eric. I gotta type quick.
You're multitasking. I don't blame you, but it was still hilarious.
Yeah.
He did play some outfield with the Red Sox.
A little bit.
Yeah. But, yeah.
But not as a Dodger. That man was slow.
And just to make sure we have this on tape, your other pick?
Zach Greinke.
Makes sense. I was waiting to pounce on Greinke had you not picked him, but you smartly picked him.
I was I took my time before I looked at the war sheet because I wanted to like come up with my names organically. And he was who I came up with. I'm like, man, it's so interesting that a guy that was not with the team that long, but I couldn't think of anyone else that would come close, and it was cool to see War back me up on that.
Another thing here. When to go after certain positions, I guess. I'm gonna stick in the outfield, which will lead you to believe that I will probably keep Bellinger at first base. I'm gonna go Matt Kemp and Yasiel Puig.
Okay. Puig was definitely next up on my want list.
Yeah, and like this is like a lot of this is emotional. For Kemp, because look, he was in the decline phase for the better part of the decade. But he had the iconic 2011 season is in the decade. An all-star as a return player in 2018. I wanted to pick in like, and you almost can't tell the story of the 2010 Dodgers without Yasiel Puig, like good and bad. Those are my two picks there.
So I'm going to go, and this, you and I were talking, you came up with a list of 100 games at a position to come up with sort of loose positional eligibility.
Yeah.
And I'm breaking trend here because my second baseman is Muncy.
Okay, no, that's totally fine. Because I remember looking, because I was just trying to figure out a cutoff, right? Like just to like list some names, just so we had sure everyone's.
And Muncy is like top 10 in WAR on the Dodgers with his 2 years. That's incredible. 2 years,
right? And exactly one of the better stories of the decade. And look, he's with the Dodgers, he's played 83 games a second, so that's, you're fine. I think you're fine. And based on how, well, who knows what they're going to do this offseason, but with like every sort of Dodger rumor involving them, like either looking after like Rendon, probably not likely, or like Josh Donaldson, maybe more likely. It involves like Justin Turner moving to first, which means Max Muncy's going to play a lot of second. So you're just thinking along with that. So I'm on board with him at second. You're totally fine.
Next up, I have actual positions I could put this player at, but I think I would be remiss if I did not put him as my utility player, Chris Taylor.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of perfect for him. He was like, yeah, I'm with you on that. That's a good call.
And just to keep our listeners in the loop, that's Muncy's 10th on position WAR and Chris Taylor's 8th.
Yeah. So we're doing a good job here of just chopping off the main players. Okay, I'm gonna go with a battery this time.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with second place Cy Young finisher Hyunjin Ryu. And I will just make sure his groin is properly taped at all times. And I just to have a
Curious who
catcher,
you're gonna go with the catcher.
I'm gonna go with Grundahl.
Okay.
Yeah.
The leader in WAR, as I think most people would guess, at the catching position at 12th, but right behind him at 13th is who I will take, and AJ Ellis.
Yeah, I was gonna
Which
say
was cool to see. That actually kind of surprised me that he was that high up. I know he was around a while, and a lot of that is just being around, but that was neat to see.
FanGraphs and Baseball Reference. I mean, FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus have the framing stats like boost Grandal's WAR to higher levels,
Sure.
and so like that's where some of the differences. But like, yeah, you're right. Like AJ Ellis would have been a perfectly like if you had picked Grandal and I had this quote unquote settle for AJ Ellis, would have been totally fine with it. He was very good for when he was here in multiple roles, including like as the backup catcher, but like. Yeah, it's a good pick.
I'm going to force you to not take one of the early teen outfielders, sort of stable outfielders. I'm going to take Andre Ethier as my first outfielder.
Yep, a Dodger lifer was sort of in the oh, sort of in that same vein with Kemp, but he was there was the rumor for years that he was going to get traded away, Ethier, but he ended up staying, and Kemp got traded. So like, yeah, he was very, very good, and that's a solid pick. Okay, back to me. I need to start filling some stuff here, but let's just make sure we get. Man, so you took Ethier. So it would behoove me. This is tough.
Yeah, we're getting to the you would
Okay.
think this would be easier, I think, to like come up with
You're
just two
right.
names in each positions.
Yeah, that's why I was like, how deep do we go? Because we could have picked like 225, but then we're like getting just
Oh.
obscure. Like, look, neither one of us wants to put Aaron Miles on a team with 2010s, but we would have probably had to as we get to that. Okay, so here I'm just gonna fill out my outfield. And I will pick Jock Peterson. And then just to add another fun pitcher, who someone we've already mentioned on this podcast, I will take Rich Hill.
Okay. I only have Zach Greinke as a pitcher, starting pitcher so far. Looking at this, how shallow is starting? It's so interesting because it feels like as long as we've been recording this podcast, we've said the strength of the Dodgers is their starting pitching. That's not
Yeah.
true when you rethink back of the Greinke years, how awful it got thereafter. But it feels like I've been saying that for so long that it would be true here. And then if you're looking by WAR, the next two available names are Hiroki Kuroda, who two seasons, two amazing seasons, and who I'm going to take. And then I'm going to let the next name I'm going to let you draft because it would not be fair if I didn't let you take the next name in WAR. So I'm going to take Hiroki Kuroda, and I've painted myself into a weird spot with shortstop, another interesting position in that it's Seager. And then a bunch of guys that you kind of think of as utility guys that just kind of plugged the hole there.
Yeah.
Okay, I will take. Oh man, I don't want to do this. I will take Hanley, which I
Yeah. Look, for absolute
the
peak value, better than any of them, I think. Like,
yeah, just also
just,
ruiner of a
yeah.
perfect game. So it makes
For
me,
sure.
but I don't have Kershaw on my team, so I guess that's fine.
Okay, so I still need to fill second, third, and a utility spot. But I kind of like my run of pitchers, and I know the name you left for me
Yeah.
on the starting pitcher, and I owned a jersey of this man, and I won't say who it is yet because I'll probably talk about him later. But I'm not going to pick him here.
I am gonna wait as long as I can to pick him. How about
no,
that?
That's totally fine. Which means right now I'm gonna pick. Man,
how are you gonna feel second and third? I literally went to bed thinking about this last night. Is once Turner's off the board?
Yeah. Okay, so what I'm gonna do right now is first draft Walker Buehler.
Okay.
Because God,
my
pictures
are bad.
What?
Wait, you're gonna force me to take Chad Billingsley. You're done with starting pitching.
You don't have to take Chad Billingsley. Yeah, but I know what you mean. Okay, so just as a symbolic gesture, I'm gonna draft Kike Hernandez.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put him at utility just because that's where.
Yeah,
I just want Chris Taylor.
You can't like they are better than the people that you're probably gonna put at second and third.
I say, but that said, like I almost want to put I might have to put him at second, or third because like yeah, that's not a deep list. So yeah,
I have some suggestions for you when you get there. I need outfielders.
Yep.
You took Jock, right?
I did.
What a jerk. Oh, no, boy. Give people an idea. Scott Van Slyke is the next up on Outfield
right?
War, who I guess I take. He had a very iconic moment in St. Louis. The not typo again, because you'll make fun of me.
That's okay. I will not make fun of you, and I'm not just saying that because he blocked me on Twitter.
And then I'm looking at this list now. Alex Verdugo is next, and then Carl Crawford after that. That's how can we only have two outfielders? Is that a thing I can do?
Look, you can position your team however you want. Like you said, but you have Chris Taylor. Like so, you said, like you could.
I'll take Chad Billingsley.
And put him in the outfield. I like it.
Thunder thighs himself.
Okay. Wait. All right. See. Okay. Let's see here.
It's just gonna the us sign. I thought this would be. I did not think outfielder would get that shallow that quick.
Right.
And a lot of that is the fact that we think of Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez as the utility players, super flexible.
Same. Yeah.
But at the same time, you need to put someone competent in the outfield.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. man. This is where it gets
so
difficult.
Third base, I have a name for you.
I got some ideas.
No, I think third is easier than you're stressing about. I think it's Juan Uribe.
Look, I'll just say this. I will pick him because he was definitely going to be one of my two picks here. So yeah. I'm going to right now place him at third. Now my question is, do I go for a second baseman or a reliever? And I was trying to set up a joke where I was taking time to pick because
I know who's coming.
The reliever I'm picking first is Pedro Bonds.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
My only decision
there was like, do I pick Baez now or do I go Uribe and a second baseman or Uribe and another utility guy? I didn't
lead with this, but I think it should be obvious that while it is lining up so far kind of on war, I'm picking more for who I like iconically think of at that position and who I remember and have the most memories of this decade. War conveniently translates to that because either the person was around a really long time and so they've kind of added 0.1, 0.5, 0.1 kind of over months of the season, or they had one or two really, really memorable years. And that's what's going to generate memories as well. And Pedro Baez definitely belongs there. One, really, really good, had also kind of bad in certain moments, but also gave us plenty of time pitching to just generate really funny tweets. Definitely one of the pitchers of the Dodger Twitter generation.
He pitched the last 6 years. He's second to Kenley in games relieved and relief innings. And look, he just straight, like, has a 1.31 ERA plus. So base level, very competent reliever. And like, he's been around forever. So I think that's why I got to take him.
I was really happy the next name that I came up with was a name that I came up with before I looked at the WAR list, and I was really happy to see it reflect in WAR, which is JP Hal. I think he flamed out a little bit and had kind of like petered out and didn't have a very good end to his Dodger career, but I just remember he had that 2.5 year stretch where he was just solid. He was the other guy you could always rely on after Kinley.
I was gonna I was hoping to like be able to take him late. And then, but also like, because, and my rationale was going to be because he would be the best fighter on the team because he famously like threw Turner Ward over the dugout rail when Turner Ward was on the Diamondbacks, in that brawl in 2013. He JP Hal was ready to go at the drop of a hat. One of the coolest guys. So.
I am now trying to stall to find another outfielder. Do you have any thoughts here? Who would you take in this position?
Okay.
This is tough. So unless I'm missing a name, because as I mentioned, the next up, the next up in terms of pure outfielder in WAR is Alex Verdugo, and that just feels weird.
Yeah, like if I, the first name I thought of was Carl Crawford. But like his time was relatively short and obviously injury plagued. But like I guess in 2013 I think he ended up like really good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a tough bar, man. To like you actually already did take Ben Slyke. I see.
We're already past that.
I like it, it's just from a like I know we're not necessarily building a team, we sort of are, but like I think you should take Verdugo just to play center, but okay. I don't know, like which one like moved you the most, because like now it's like it's relatively short. Verdugo is really only like the equivalent of like a full season, but he's been parts of three seasons. Crawford was the equivalent of like two seasons. Andrew Tolles was like the equivalent of a half season, but also sort of memorable.
And the other options, as I'm looking just kind of at our master list, are all, I could move Taylor to the outfield. And then there's a bunch of these 10-11 guys who I don't really, I think of the thinking of Rafael Furcal and Casey Blake, and I think of them as aughts Dodgers. Like, I know they were here for the first two years of the decade, but I don't associate them with sort of this wave.
Right. You're right. That's sort of where I'm at with them.
No, too. You know what? I'm gonna pick Carl Crawford as a. I'll have both. I almost like Nick Punto's not far behind on this WAR list, but I'll have both representatives of the trade, and like one of the first really big memories of that sort of second wave Dodger team of the decade.
Yeah. So wait, are you telegraphing your last pick to be Josh Beckett?
I'll have to look, but he actually is probably pretty high up on list, isn't he?
No, look, it's not. Yeah, it's not bad. No, I think by our sort of loose requirements, he didn't quite he didn't make 50 starts.
Okay,
that was
no,
the problem.
But he
was excellent. Like in his last year too, and he retired.
No, I think I knew who I want to take with my last starting pitchy pick. But you're up.
Okay, so I have to pick a reliever and an offensive player, preferably second base.
I think I have a second baseman in mind for you.
I already know, like, okay, so I will go. I'm going to play the grizzled veteran reporter card right now. And okay, so I'm going to go D. Gordon for second.
What?
I'm going D. Gordon.
Okay.
Yeah. I like the steals. I liked how he was, I thought he was excellent in 2014, made strides. Then they obviously was traded. And for my reliever, I'm going to go Javi Guerra. Like, just a good dude. Was the nominal closer for every couple of years where they were like, you know, I don't know about Kenley yet. And then, like, they started off the year with Javi Guerra. Then they always ended up with Kenley. But, yeah, so just two, like, wonderful guys to cover. But also actually, like, performed, like, with the Dodgers too. So, like, just for instance, like, so obviously Kenley dominated. Javi Guerra was tied for second in saves for the Dodgers of the decade with Jonathan Broxton. And he actually pitched more innings because Broxton was mostly hurt. So, yeah, and he had a 129 ERA plus in his, you know, 102 innings, which is what we're down to at this point, like, looking at performance. But, yeah, I know. Who did you think?
Chase Utley.
You thought I was going to go. Look, like, that would have been a fine pick. But I just think, like, it would have been a fine pick. I don't have any problem with that. But I just – when I do really enjoy a guy who steals a crap load of bases, even if the rest of his game has flaws, like, there's a spot for that. So, yeah, I sort of like that. And plus, he was really good defensively at second. So, yeah, that's sort of my team.
Okay. Your team, I won't fault you. I think it's odd that Utley made neither of our teams, but
yeah,
you know, that's what it is. Kenta Maeda is my last pitcher.
Very solid. And since we could sort of do this either way, I will be okay if he relieves for you at some point.
Yeah, no, what will happen is near the end of the year, I'll trade him to you. You'll make him a reliever, and you'll give me someone else back.
We were talking about this, and, like, had we gone a certain level of depth, like, Ross Stripling would have qualified, I think, had we sort of loosened the requirements a little bit. Same with Julio Urias, like, starter reliever, that sort of thing. The other, just to peel behind the curtain. Oh, yeah, Gordon also qualifies at shortstop if I wanted to do that, but I have Seager, so it's fine. But Jamie Carroll was the other multi-positional guy who sure. played 100 games. He played 100 over 100 games at second and over 100 at short. So he was sort of their, like, utility knife player. Before the sort of modern era. So, yeah, those, I think we came up with two pretty good teams.
I think so too.
Yeah. And it sort of went, like, especially the top, it went, like, as we sort of expected. So it was good.
So we're way behind for a commercial break. We're going to do that. And then I've got a couple of trivia questions for you. We have a rewind and we have questions from Craig. Okay. Before we move completely beyond these two war lists you sent me, this is a mini trend of the show. I love small sample sizes, and I love weird stat oddities when I just tweak the minimum requirements a little bit.
Yep.
And so I'm going to do that for you, Eric. I have two trivia questions, one for each of these lists. Let's start with Clayton Kershaw. We talked about him a lot. He had a 164 ERA plus over the decade. That does not lead the team amongst the top 100 WAR earners of the decade. Does not lead the team. There are, I believe, three pitchers above him in that. Can you name them? And this is and this is not truly small sample size. I mean, it is, but these are, you know, I'm not looking at the full list because it gets weird. I'm looking at someone that earned a top 100 WAR over the decade.
Kenley.
Kenley did not. He had a 163, just below Kershaw.
Come on. Okay. Wow. J.P. Howell?
Nope. J.P. Howell had a 148.
What a loser. Okay. And I'm talking about me, not J.P. Howell. I don't want him to fight me. let's say... Wow, this is... I'm going to be very mad
these, at this. All three of these were one-season jobs.
Okay, perfect. Brandon Morrow.
Absolutely. 202.
Nice.
Not the lead in ERA plus. The two remaining names both were this year.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, Russell Martin, obviously. Is Infinity on there?
No, so what's interesting is I don't think they actually list ERA plus for position players pitching. Because his is just a blank. So maybe it is Infinity. I don't know.
So let's say it's four. Okay.
So there is actually one other name of, and it was not this year. I shouldn't count that. He has a zero war. Okay, so players above a zero war. How about that? I'm not counting Daniel Corsino, who had a 191 ERA plus.
Okay, that's perfect. And then, so there was another person from 2019?
There are two. Oh, man. And one from 2014. I apologize.
Good Lord. Josh Beckett wasn't that high that year.
No, nope.
2014. I'm trying to think of.
So two from this year, one from 2014.
So thin that year in the bullpen, they stuck with Kershaw so long in the NLDS.
It was actually a start.
Really?
One game start.
Oh, do that. Okay, then I'm. This is going to be really tough. Okay, I'm trying to think about this year though.
Yes. You know these two names.
I should. Adam Kolarik.
5.52 ERA plus.
And then, oh no, he's sort of okay.
Go for your gut.
No, it's not because that's wrong.
Okay.
I don't like.
This player did not make the postseason roster.
Right.
Much to my chagrin.
So, my gut was Dylan Floro, but I thought he flamed out.
Casey Sadler.
Ah, there you go.
And in 2014, Red Patterson.
Oh, that's perfect.
197.
What a perfect name.
All right.
That's perfect.
We'll do this next one quick. Of the top 100 players of hitting WAR, and get you an idea of this, we're really going down to like 70. Yes. Six, I think. Nope, excuse me, 79. Four or five of them, I have to recheck one of them, have an OPS of one or higher. Can you name them? Two earned the majority of their at-bats this season. And it's four, I believe.
And I guess Kenley Jansen wouldn't be on here.
Correct. He's 944 OPS for Kenley.
What a loser. This is I don't know why I can't think of this. Let me think here. Very limited. Dun, dun, dun.
One of these players just was legitimately very, very good this year. Period.
Yeah. Okay. And this is okay in total, though, right?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, Will Smith?
Nope.
Didn't make it. This is terrible. I'm drawing a blank on like everything. I don't know why I can't think of
So, a quick hint, if there's ever a small sample size hitting question, one of the answers is always Dennis Santana.
Sure. I remember that double.
The leader, as far as I can tell, in OPS for the Dodgers in the decade. At three is Jin-Hui Cao.
Nice.
Perfect. Edwin Rios, 1.010.
Okay, that's a weird way to say it, but okay.
1.1010. I don't know what you want me to say. Yeah, David Freese.
10-10.
David Freese is the name I thought you would get.
Of course, you're right.
And
I'm guessing he was, 1970 or so, whatever he was. No. just roughly.
Yeah, 1.028. Yeah. And then finally, Roger Bernardina, 1.15. Ah,
what a perfect
2014. Hitter. What a weird year.
Man, I should have went with Chris Heisey.
Well, I think you have a rewind for us and then some questions from Craig.
I do. Okay, so the rewind, we've mentioned Kershaw and his 59 war in the decade. Knapp Rucker was the very first Dodger to have a 30 war decade, and he did so in the 1910s. He only pitched for 10 years. This is the dead ball era. So 1907 and 1916 were his years. The Dodgers were bad in those years. Like the first eight of his years, the Dodgers were under 500. They barely, they were like between fifth and seventh in an eight-team National League every single year. And then they finally like got to the World Series in his final year, but he was kind of broken down by then, 1916. But he was 131 in his career, but he had a 2.42 ERA. That's lower than Kershaw nominally. It's the second best in Dodgers history. But his ERA plus, to give you an idea of the error, was 1.19. So like, but yeah, to have a 500 record on those like terrible teams, very excellent. The first seven of those years, he was basically a, it's basically seven full years as a starter, then sort of hung on. He had some arm issues, and you know, back then there was really no, there was no nothing you could do when you had an arm injury. You were just kind of done. But in those seven full years, he averaged 17 wins, 18 losses, and 302 innings. he got into the game. He got into one game in the 1916 World Series. It was mop-up duty in Game 4. The Dodgers lost that game. They were already down 6-2 in the game. He pitched two scoreless innings, though. The Sabre bio for Knapp Rucker is written by Eric Enders, old friend of Dodger Thoughts, and long time like baseball historian, Dodger fan. The quote he got from he included in the Sabre bio, Charles Ebbets in 1915, he said, "I would give a great deal of money to have my club in a World Series." Ebbets was the owner. They named Ebbets Field after him. Ebbets says, "If only for the honor it would bring Rucker. I will always regard him as one of the great men the game has produced, greatest in every way." 1910, Rucker led the National League in starts, 39 complete games, 27 innings, batter's face, and hits allowed because he was out there so long. He pitched 300 innings four times. He's eighth in Dodger history in innings pitched, despite only pitching for 10 seasons. He's sixth overall in WAR, 47.2. There are only five ahead of him are four Hall of Famers and Kershaw. He was the first to have a 30 WAR decade, first Dodger. He won 22 games in 1911. That was the Dodgers record in Brooklyn for a left-handed pitcher. So, like, no left-hander won more until Koufax, basically. He had a 16 strikeout game in 1909. That was the Dodgers strikeout record until Koufax in 1959. So that's a long time to hold a record. Mm-hmm. He pitched a no-hitter in 1908. That was the Dodgers' third no-hitter in history. He had no walks in the game, but he also hit a batter. and the batter he hit was the opposing pitcher.
That's a more perfect game.
Yeah, but also the Dodgers made three errors behind him. So it was just a sloppy game all around. They won 6-0, though. He pitched the first game in Ebbets Field. It was a 1-0 loss. That was sort of emblematic of how good he was and how bad the Dodgers were. He only allowed an unearned run in his eight innings that game. He pitched, he also pitched in the first exhibition game at Ebbets Field. This was 1913. It was 4 days before the opener. They played the Yankees. He won that game. He was from Georgia. He scouted the South for like 20 years, roughly, give or take, after his playing days were over. And among the players per – this was per, I believe, his Sabre I can't remember if this was Sabre bio or his baseball reference wiki. He found Dazzy Vance, a Hall of Famer, among other things, Al Lopez, and Hugh Casey as a scout. So, like, he was, you know, one of those baseball lifer type guys. And, so that's Knapp Rucker.
I love it. I've really appreciated you bringing this in. As someone, as we know, who kind of whose history memory gets a little hazy when you get before the time I was alive. I love hearing about these old Dodgers.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, we have some time for
questions from Craig.
This may be the longest episode of the decade, so we'll get through these kind of quick. With the non-tender deadline looming, give me the date of when Cody Bellinger, Max Muncy, and Chris Taylor sign their new deals.
Okay, so we talked about deadlines sort of forcing the action here, and the Dodgers tend to like get deals done before then. It's usually the day of or maybe the couple days after. We talked last episode about how Bellinger's a prime candidate for like a 4-year or like an extension possibly, but who knows? That could get done after – he agrees to like a 1 year deal and they just keep talking through spring or something. I will say, Muncy gets signed on the 9th, January 9th, one day before the exchange deadline, and Bellinger and Taylor signed on the 10th.
I'm going to go the 3rd for all three.
The 3rd, a week before.
Yep.
All right. All right, you know what? You remind. Okay, you're adding
this. I think we noted this last week. We've done these bets forever and ever and ever, and we never kept track. Them. Yeah. Never. We've never done it. I think a couple times I said I would, and I never did. You said the 7th for Muncy and 9th for the others. There.
No, 9th for Muncy and the 10th for the other. Okay. Bellinger Taylor.
For Muncy. But now we have a spreadsheet. We're keeping track of them, and we'll figure out what the stakes are. I'll be home. I'll be back in LA for the holidays. We'll have a beer, and we'll figure out what the stakes are going to be.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do like a full year's worth and keep track of points or whatever.
Or will we have a steak and figure out what the beers are going to be?
Oh, man. I dislike that. All right. Next up. Now, this is for you. And it's another 2010s question. This is where did Mike Trout rank in AL total stats for the decade in runs, hits, triples, and home runs? And I have the answers in front of me.
So the funny part about this, I talked to you about this before we went on. A couple weeks ago when the MVP voting came out, I wrote something about Mike Trout and his sort of MVP award history in the last 8 years. It's been ridiculous. I wrote for SB Nation, and among the things I included in the article were his like ranks in the majors since his debut, which was or I think I just counted since 2012, his basically 8 full seasons. And the funny part, I remember a couple things, but like I don't remember any of the things that Craig asked. So like, and then plus not to mention like how I have to suss out who was ahead of him and figure out where he ranks on the AL. So I'm kind of winging it on some of these. All right. Yeah, feel free. Go ahead.
Runs.
Okay, runs is his, like, he's batted higher in the lineup. Robinson Cano got traded out of the league. So I'm going to say... I think he's first in runs.
Correct. Who second is? Ian Kinsler.
Hits. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
No, that tripped me up. Hits.
Okay, so hits, lost a little bit of playing time, a couple years, also walks a ton. So I think he's down the list on this, but since it's American League and not majors, I'm going to say 6th.
10th.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, right. I think, again, walking a ton, I think, is probably the big thing there.
Yeah.
Triples.
Offhand, I couldn't tell you how many triples he has.
46. Probably
that's a shocking amount because, and given that nobody hits triples anymore, I'm going to just say he's 3rd.
Correctamundo, on the dot.
Wow.
Brett Gardner at first, Austin Jackson was 2nd.
I was going to say, it would have taken me a long time to guess he's ahead of him.
Home runs.
I believe he has like 240 something, or maybe
a little higher. I think you're missing a season.
Okay. It is 8 season. Okay, so
I think you may literally be missing a season. 285.
Okay, so I know for sure. Oh, it's 285. Holy shit. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so
it took the hour and a half mark for you to hit.
Okay.
Explicit. We got there though.
Okay, so I think he's 3rd.
You are correct.
Because if I remember right, it's Nelson Cruz and Edwin Encarnacion ahead of him.
Dead on.
Yeah.
You remember your round trippers.
And I think Giancarlo Stanton is the only one in between them.
I only have AL numbers, so I couldn't tell you.
I hear you, yeah.
Next week, they will announce any of these nominees on the 2020 modern era baseball era ballot. I've got a large list for you. Just if you think any of these names have a chance, let me know. Dwight Evans, Steve Garvey, Tommy John, Dodd Mattingly, Marvin Miller, Thurman Munson, Dale Murphy, Dave Parker, Ted Simmons, and Lou Whitaker.
I think Marvin Miller should be in, like, the easiest one there. But, like, I just think it's – I don't know. You have to get 12 out of 16. It's a smaller, like, more crony-type thing. It's a mix of there's a few writers, the ex-Hall of Fame president. Some Hall of Famers are on this list, too. There's a lot of agenda stuff going on in these little, like, backroom things. It gets announced next week. I don't think Miller will be a pick just because he hasn't been multiple times. I think of this group, look, we had Alan Trammell and Jack Morris already elected. Lou Whitaker was as good or better than Morris, I think, and roughly as good as Alan Trammell. A great combo and, like, shamefully off the ballot, Hall of Fame writers ballot after 1 year. He got like 2.something%, I think, and he was off just terrible. So will that get corrected now? I think in 3 years ago, Lou Whitaker was actually left off this ballot. So I think it's a hard thing to say that he's going to jump from not being considered to all of a sudden having the support to get the 12 votes. So he's out. Man, who do they pick? Like, I don't know. Who do they really pick here? Dwight Evans has a very good case. I think Tommy John has a case baseball-wise and historical significance-wise. So, like, if I had to pick, I would say, like, who I would vote for. Marvin Miller, Lou Whitaker, Ted Simmons, and maybe Dwight Evans. Because you can only vote for four. But, like, I don't know if any of them get in. I don't remember what any of the voting was the 3 years ago when these last folks were up. So this is just a total guess on my part, but I'm going to guess. I'll just say Lou Whitaker. I don't know. Who knows? It's a total guess.
This is obviously a question for Jay Jaffe. This is his bread
and
butter.
And go to Fangraphs. He's like written up everything on this.
And I have not read all of them, but it's when I get to one, there are some of my favorite reads. And the one I did get to, and he makes the case for, is Thurman Munson. So he's the name I think should be in there. An old teacher of mine is a huge Yankees fan of that era who. I think he has that sort of Pee Wee Reese era where, like, maybe numbers wise, you're just a little short. But one, it's because he died.
Right. Yeah. And, he died, like, during his career.
Yeah.
Like,
and two, not even if he just decided to retire early, he has that sort of aura of a special member on the special team.
MVP, multiple World Series winner, like, noted, like, leader of a chaotic.
Exactly.
Like,
and I think that, like, I think that allows, like, that can't, you can make the argument that shouldn't have been enough to get Pee Wee Reese into the Hall of Fame.
But Reese had the longevity and, like, actual performance, too. Yeah, exactly.
And I think, you're right. I think it's certainly enough to get Thurman over the bar. So.
But also, like, Kirby Puckett got the benefit of, like, getting an injury shortened career. And, like, Munson was way better than Puckett. I think, you know, just off the top of my head, like, he was better than Puckett, I think. Different positions, obviously.
Right. Also, all-time facial hair, Baseball Hall of Fame. So, that alone, Thurman Munson.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Especially, like, got away with that on the Yankees. That's worth something. I noticed on Sunday evening when I walked past the same store window display, both going and coming back from dinner, that I heard Nat King Cole's version of the Christmas song each time, so that led me to believe that it's on a continuous loop 24 hours a day. My request, pick two holiday-themed songs, any genre, that you could hear more than twice a day through Christmas.
What's not
on this list? Wonderful Christmas Time. What? Yeah. That's the one that played basically almost, it was like a 5-song list, and that was one of them when I worked at a mall, and it was, I just cringed every time it came on.
Simply Having. Okay, so look, I'm going to go total cliche, and I'm a bastard for doing this, but it's the Bruce Springsteen Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I literally listened to that today once already. I'm going to listen to it again today just so I can get it twice just to fulfill Craig's requirement. We have to pick two? Okay. there's like a lot of good Christmas songs. But how many of these do you want to hear over and over again? Or I guess twice a day. Do you want to pick one first and let me think?
Sure. So this is actually very much up my alley, because I used to maintain, when Ardio was a streaming music service, and try to maintain it on Spotify, but I've been behind, a Christmas playlist. So I can't count it because it's not technically a song, and I think of this as an album. But you have the Charlie Brown Christmas album, which I basically do listen to on repeat during the Christmas season. I don't know if I could pick one song off of that. Mm-hmm. Maybe Greensleeves, but I don't know. But if I had to go songs, my two favorite Christmas songs, and they're both kind of indie pop rock hits, not hits, but they were made. Ryla Kylie has a song called Xmas Cake, and fitting for this, they're both food related. The Minus Five have a song called Your Christmas Whiskey.
Nice. I think I'm going to go traditional. I almost want to say the Bing Crosby White Christmas, because it's so like iconic, but it's also like a little bit stuffy. Like if you want to go, I'm going to go, it's still very old, but also kind of cool. I'm going to go Blue Christmas by Elvis.
All right. No, acceptable. Going to note this. I think the other song that gets brought up, other than Wonderful Christmas Time, of sort of the ad nauseum effect of this season, is Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. There are worse songs to be played ad nauseum. That's a
good song. Yeah. Then also, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Last Christmas.
Sure.
Because that's a fun song too.
Last question.
Last question.
As we may know, Eric, Craig is in Paris this week, so his food question is about breakfast pastry, but not the donut, the croissant.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember, he first wants to know, do you remember the first time you had a croissant? And no, I don't.
I cannot say I do. Like okay. probably the first, I almost want to say it's Burger King, but I don't think that's true. It's the most dominant.
Mine was probably like a Pillsbury popping in the oven thing.
I think Pillsbury, like technically
those are croissant rolls.
Rolls, but like, cause they're like, well, we can't, we don't know.
Yeah. The French are going to get really mad.
Yeah. they had freedom rolls or I can't remember. Like there had to be a certain time where maybe it was like a store bought collection of pastries,
sure,
or something, so maybe that's it. But like I don't know if I associated it with anything other than like,
yeah, for me, like, I probably just thought it was the same thing as the Pillsbury thing, because I was, you know, exactly, an uneducated 10-year-old or something.
Yeah,
but anyways,
the croissant sandwich is solid.
The final question, rank the following croissants: plain, savory, cheese counts as savory, and sweet, like a chocolate croissant.
Well, like I am a huge proponent of like if I had to pick a breakfast pastry, and I guess, wait, does pastry like count like any like toasted thing or like a bagel? That doesn't count.
I don't
pastry,
think so. No.
Okay, because I would say cheese Danish is probably my go-to pastry, and so I would rank savory first. And I can't say I've had a chocolate croissant.
Oh, your list is going to change.
Like I would imagine it's very good. It's but very like, good. I think for now, I would imagine it's better than plain. So I'm picking it second, and then plain. But like I don't know if I would want a plain croissant other than to like surround it with meat. Like I would make it the bread for a breakfast sandwich. But I think for me it's cheese or savory the whole way.
Chocolate, savory, plain. Although I do like a plain one with just a little bit of butter and jam. So
yep,
done.
Yay!
Whew, that was a long one.
Yeah. So the federal meetings, the winter meetings will be completed by the time we record next, which will be before Christmas. The market's moving a little faster this time. Yeah. Actually, as we're recording, Mike Moustakas, reporter, multiple reports, 4 years, $64 million with the Reds.
Ooh.
So things are getting a little interesting. Yeah. And the Padres traded for Jerickson Profar from the A's. So they've been sort of wheeling and dealing. Oh, and they signed Drew Pomeranz too last week. So.
So yeah, if anything breaking happens with the Dodgers, you and I might try to record earlier. Otherwise, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. We may take an extra week off over the holidays just because I'll be traveling, we'll be busy, but we might have a bonus episode. We'll see. By the way, we'll talk to you at least in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.